Okay, welcome back everyone, and welcome back to our typical topic, or broadly our typical topic, our usual mode here, learning Hilchos Shabbos. We've spent some time learning Hilchos Yontif together, the various Yomim Tovim as they've arisen, and time to turn back, time to get back to the bread and butter of Shabbos, the week in and the week out. So very, very much looking forward to beginning anew with everyone. So looking through Shmir Shabbos Kilchos a little bit and trying to get back to, and thanks for everybody who chimed in on the preference to learn something inside, so to speak, as opposed to more of the PowerPoint kind of presentation that we've been rolling with for the Yom Tovim. It seems like overwhelmingly this was more of the interest to be able to actually read the text inside together. So looking forward to getting back to that modality here. Now, looking at Shemir Shabbos Kilchos, so looking at some of the topics we hadn't yet done. So this doesn't really directly, anyway, address a malacha per se, which has been, I guess, the bulk of what we've done together. But I thought this is a very appropriate limud for this time now specifically. This is Perek Lamed Beis. This comes from the first chelek, I think, from the first chelek of Shemir Shabbos Kilchos, and it is dinei pikuach nefesh, dinei pikuach nefesh, and how we violate under most circumstances, depending on the specificity and the acuteness of the actual issue at hand, of the actual pikuach nefesh and the potential life-saving ability that we have, so that we violate Shabbos for these things and trying to learn some of the ins and outs of these halachos and when this heter, if you will, applies and when it doesn't apply. So a couple of reasons just to frame out this limit for right now specifically. These are issues that certainly we always deal with. We always deal with in some capacity or another. Oftentimes, you're dealing with them because of a simcha, because of a birth, or anticipating a birth, and those kinds of things. Sometimes it's less severe and it's less acute, and even life-saving procedure or what have you that maybe we're not that concerned, but nevertheless that we should engage in this. So again, sometimes for very, very good and happy kinds of occasions, certainly when we come out of it having, let's say, saved a life or having prolonged life. Having made a life more comfortable in at least some circumstances. But now in particular, there is so much going on that necessitates really what would otherwise be construed as a violation, as a chilul Shabbos, that now under the circumstances that we are in, Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, in which malacha is always regularly done by the army and chayilim, even those particularly observant, punctiliously observant. Nevertheless, certain things do have to get done on Shabbos in a life-saving capacity. But now, well, the more so. Now there's just so much. There's so much that's taking place. Of course, when the soldiers were initially called up from the reserves, and that took place on a Shabbos and Yontif, and there were these kinds of considerations. So number one. Number two, there is a precept that we follow that we try to leverage to our advantage, which is the idea of recitation of karbanos. When we recite karbanos, it's really part of shacharis in the morning that we recite different passages from the Torah that detail the particulars and the halachos of the karbanos. And we do that because, of course, we cannot bring karbanos bisman hazeh. Because I'll say that one who studies the karbanos, when he recites the psukim and understands them and is ma'ayin into the halachos of the karbanos, it's ki'ilu like he himself was makriv that carbon, like he actually brought that carbon directly himself, personally. So there is something to be said for the idea of study of Talmud Torah, Limud HaTorah, and the limud of specific areas of Torah actually serving as something of a fulfillment of the practice of those areas of halacha and of Torah. Certainly, we invoke that when it comes to the recitation of karbanos. And it's something that hopefully we can invoke here in some capacity, that by learning about these halachos and by fulfilling them in thought and in limud, hopefully we don't need to come to a point where they need to be fulfilled actually in practice. So both as a means of trying to combine our or attach our minds, connect our minds to something that so many in Klal Yisrael are now going through directly, and also hopefully as some sort of a kiyum or a kapara, that this should take the place of needing to actually live through a position of actually having real acute challenges and questions of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos directly. It should serve in that zechus. So having said that, let's actually dive in. Dinei pikuach nefesh, and first and foremost, the subtopic is harishus v'achovah l'chalal Shabbos. We should be aware of the fact that permission is granted and that overwhelmingly it becomes an actual chovah. It becomes an obligation to be mechalal Shabbos. And really in this regard, Mechalal Shabbos is something of a misnomer. It is not that we're being Mechalal Shabbos. This is actually a proper kiyum, meaning this is precisely what we're supposed to do. Chilul Shabbos is a very, very harsh sort of connotation. The reality is that in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh, it might actually be precise to say that we are Mechal Shabbos. We are making Shabbos like secular. We're making it like Chol. We're making it like the rest of the week. And indeed we are, because ordinarily the distinction that exists between Shabbos and the rest of the week is Malacha. So when we are performing Malacha, even if for a very, very good reason, it sounds a little harsh, the idea of desecration. It's not a desecration of Shabbos. It's that we're turning it back into a Chol. We're turning it back into a regular weekday insofar as we're performing malacha, but that's obviously for a mitzvah, that's obviously for good cause, it's obviously for good reason, and indeed maybe something that we're actually chayav to do. So let's take a look at that. Mutar l'chalos Shabbos l'hatzolas chayei ha'adam. It is permissible to be mechalos Shabbos, to violate Shabbos, in the interest of trying to save a person's life. Afilu mitzvah la'asos. Even, it might even be a mitzvah to do this. It might be a mitzvah to be mechalos Shabbos in this context. Lasos kein bechol mikra shakayim pikuach nefesh. In any instance in which there is actually a real valid issue of pikuach nefesh, of genuinely saving a person's life, or osafik pikuach nefesh, even if it's only a doubt, even if it's only a suffik, which is a really extraordinary thing, right? Ordinarily, we abide by the principle whenever it comes to a deoraisa, which Shabbos oftentimes is. Oftentimes, when we're speaking about doing malacha and life-saving endeavors on Shabbos, oftentimes we're speaking about Isurei Da'oraisa, and we usually say that Safik Da'oraisa L'chumra, that when it comes to even a doubt that perhaps there's a Da'oraisa at stake, that we have to be machmir, we have to be strict, and therefore we would have to, let's say, avoid violating that potential Isur Da'oraisa. In this instance, it's actually flipped around. It is a mitzvah to save somebody's life. That mitzvah overrides Shabbos, even if there is only a doubt as to whether that mitzvah exists. I'm not certain I can save their life. I'm not certain that their life needs to be saved. Maybe. We'll have to talk about the point at which we do at least achieve a genuine doubt. But maybe I'm saving their life, and that maybe, that if it's a genuine and sincere doubt, that's enough to tell us that the mitzvah exists, that the mitzvah applies, and if the mitzvah applies, that means that I should indeed be mechal Shabbos. So v'chol hazoriz u'memahar l'chalos Shabbos b'mikra kazeh, anybody who is, the quicker a person is, the more zrizus you have to be mechal Shabbos, it's almost an amusing thing to say. The more quick you are to be Mechal Shabbos in this capacity and in this context, Harizah Meshubach, the more praiseworthy that person is. It's a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah, it's absolutely what we're supposed to be doing. The quicker you are to do so, the better off you really are. There's some discussion in the notes here on the bottom as to what exactly constitutes a suffik pikuach nefesh. Regular pikuach nefesh is a little bit more clear cut. It's very, very clear that this person is in some sort of, again, pronounced need, pronounced danger. And I know that I have the ability to save them. I have the ability to intervene, and I have the ability to save their life and to spare them. So that is maybe a little bit more clear cut. What happens if it's not so clear cut? What happens if, well, they may be doing okay right now. I might be able to defer the life-saving efforts until after Shabbos. What exactly is considered to be an act of at least suffik pikuach nefesh, so that we can say that the doubt is really there and is genuine? So it's discussed in the notes here. He quotes from Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, is that the issue at least has to have arrived, meaning that if there is something that threatens the person's life, that threat at least needs to be here. The idea that maybe it might happen that that they'll get sick. It might happen that he'll suffer from a heart attack. He's not in the midst of it now, but you never know what could happen. You can appreciate that everything in life, you should know this now more than ever, everything in life is a suffix. Everything in life is a doubt. You never know what's going to happen the next minute. You never know what's around the bend. And therefore, you could begin to make the arguments that anybody or anything in the name of safety, security, health measures, things that will reduce any sort of risk, okay, so that's all within the purview of Safek Pikuach Nefesh. It's not so simple. It's not so clear cut exactly what can and should be defined as a Safek Pikuach Nefesh. Again, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach talks about how the issue, the threat, the danger, the illness needs to have already developed. It needs to already have taken root. And then we're just in doubt as to how pronounced is the consideration? Is it necessarily the case that it's going to develop and that this person's going to get much more sick, you know, very, very quickly? That's when the, some of those doubts begin to arise. But the issue at hand has to at least be here. I heard a very interesting talk from Rav Asher Weiss a number of years ago. This was shortly after the shooting in the synagogue in Pittsburgh. that was then followed by a string of other anti-Semitic events and attacks. So if you recall, we're really, I mean, it's almost just become like the backdrop of our lives at this point, but, you know, guards at shuls and things like that. So when this was all first taking place and all first happening, he gave a very interesting presentation that he made to Rabbanim in America about his, what he considered to be appropriate mitigating measures that shuls should take and the like. And this was really the crux of it. At what point do you say that something is a genuine suffik pikuach nefesh? On the one hand, you can make the argument that, well, the threat is very much pronounced. It's very much here. We know that it exists in the country and there have been these attacks. Mitzad echad, mitzad sheni, can make the argument that it's not here, here. I'm not looking right at it. I don't necessarily know. And even something that maybe I might guess is some kind of threat. Is it really a threat? Is it yes? Is it no? Maybe I'm not really looking at anything. Maybe I'm being, you know, overly paranoid. It's not so simple. It's not so clear as to precisely the point at which you say that you are in the midst of a safek pikuach nefesh. His psak, just to not leave you hanging, was that he felt that considering the atmosphere, that there would be a heter without the chiyav. Right here, we're talking about a clear-cut case. Not only is it mutter, but vafilu mitzvah la'asos kein. It's even a mitzvah to do it. Felt that if the shul, an individual, wanted to say, I'm not that concerned. I don't feel that what I saw necessarily warrants, you know, calling the police if it's, I don't know, if it's a suspicious looking this or that. But that at the same time, if a person were to perceive it otherwise and would become much more concerned, that there was enough there to consider it safek pikuach nefesh. Some of these things become a little bit subjective and a little bit in the eye of the beholder. As we go along and as we go through this, we'll have to also differentiate between, let's say, violating an Isser D'Oraisa, violating an Isser D'Rabbanan. Not everything we do on Shabbos that's Usser necessarily violates Torah law. Some of it is rabbinic, which obviously gives us a little bit more latitude when it comes to these sorts of things. Okay, at any rate, let's take a look at the Shmos Shabbos Kilchus and what he says further here, still in the same Seif. When we do these things, meaning, let's say to violate Shabbos in order to save a sick Jew, who is beset by a particular sakana, he's in danger, then ein osin, we don't do this lo al yedei nachrim. We don't do so by employing, and I don't mean for hire, but employing the services of a non-Jew. We don't do so. We do it directly. If this person needs to be saved, then this person needs to be saved. Velo al yedei ketanim. And we also don't employ the services of a katan, saying that, look, you're only 10. So technically speaking, you're not really chayiv in Shabbos. You're not a gadol or a gadola. Do me a favor. We have to call the ambulance. You dial 911. You dial Hatzalah. You do it because I'm chayiv in Shabbos. You're not chayiv in Shabbos. Once we say that we've achieved, that we've crossed the threshold, we've reached the necessary benchmark to say that this is pikuach nefesh, or this is at least safek pikuach nefesh, then we say it is a mitzvah to do so. And any gadol b'Yisrael, I don't mean like gadol b'Yisrael, but any gadol, any adult Jew would then have the obligation and the mitzvah, the responsibility and the opportunity to engage in pikuach nefesh. You have to be careful to not unnecessarily double up your efforts, right? There's no mitzvah in a home, a shul, wherever it is, you know, lo aleinu, that somebody, somebody goes down, we think they're having a heart attack, we're not sure. There isn't necessarily a mitzvah for like 18 people simultaneously to all get their phones out, for a million different Hatzalah members to all show up and all be involved in the exact same thing, or just doubling all the unnecessary efforts, yet the person, the one person, the two people, you know, to be involved. But once we do, then it would certainly be a mitzvah to do so. V'lo al yedei nashim, nor do we say that this should just be the purview of nashim, of women. Now that's something of a ridiculous point. Actually, in the notes, clarifies why there might be maybe a stronger havamina. But of course, when it comes to Shabbos, women are just as chayiv in Shabbos as men are. So there's no notion of, well, let's have like a woman do this malacha because she's not technically chayiv. A woman is very much technically chayiv in all aspects of Shabbos, just as a man is. Kadeshalotei Shabbos kala be'ineihem. So why is it that we don't make a point of trying to find others who can actually make these efforts instead of us? Because we don't want Shabbos to become light in our eyes. So we employ the services of adults and even Rabbanim, the frumest of the frum and the oldest of the old and the most senior and the most mature. The adult members of Klal Yisrael should all be engaged in these activities. And it's usher to delay, it's usher to tarry. For any other issue of pikuach nefesh, either whether it's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, it's somebody who has a pronounced medical need, or any other scenario in which there's potential pikuach nefesh at hand, get involved, do it right away. We don't look for other people. The reason why I mention this is that, and he has this discussion in the footnotes as well, that is some of the thinking potentially behind why is it that why don't I ask the non-Jew to do so? So the concern is perhaps that if I as an adult recognize how pronounced this need is, I as an adult Jew, I'm going to make sure that it gets done, and I'm going to do it very quickly. I'll do it with alacrity. I'll ensure that it gets done as expeditiously as possible. I'll be involved and I'll call whoever I need to call. But if I pass it off to somebody else, then who knows? If you want something done, you got to do it yourself. Number one. Number two, another svara. And by the way, it may be, therefore, he says, that if that really is the thought process behind it, maybe, if a non-Jew is standing here and we can ask him to make the phone call, or we can ask him to get involved, and I'm standing right here and I can help direct and guide and push and prompt, so then maybe there is value. Maybe there would be value as long as I'm certain that I can manage the situation. The other concern that we have is that perhaps if I start looking around for the non-Jew, so right now he's right here, but what happens in a situation in which he's not right here? What happens about a time, what happens in a scenario when, I don't know, I have to start knocking on doors? Now you're losing precious moments, precious minutes, and we can't start to develop that kind of workflow when it comes to pikuach nefesh. So a couple of different svaras, a couple of different reasons as to why it is that we might do it ourselves. According to that second reason, even if he's right here, I still do it right now, because I'm concerned about creating a culture, about creating that workflow that other people are going to start to adopt, let's say the next time that emergency situation happens. So we get involved ourselves, we do it directly. Again, this is under circumstances in which it is very, very clear. Pikuach nefesh, safek pikuach nefesh. We'll speak about some fringe cases where maybe it's not necessarily so clear, the need isn't necessarily so pronounced. We do feel like we have time and we have, you know, some flexibility and some latitude, and then maybe we indeed would employ a non-Jew. But under most circumstances, we just go directly. Why is this? Why is this? What's at stake here? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Asher yaseh osam ha'adam v'chai b'hem." So my grandfather, Olav Shalom, one of his favorite pasukim, v'chai b'hem Chazal darshin v'chai b'hem v'lo sheyomus b'hem. That you should do these mitzvos. A person must do these mitzvos v'chai b'hem and live by them. So we would take this poetically as, you should live by the mitzvahs. Live by the mitzvahs. They should be your life's blood, and they should be your life force. And this should be the reason why you get up in the morning, and this should be the reason why you do anything. It should animate you in your spirit. You live by these words. They become your calling and your creed. So Chazal Darshan, in a very, very literal capacity, v'chai b'hem v'lo sheyamos b'hem, that you have to live by them, you're not allowed to die by them. These mitzvos cannot be the reason for your death. These mitzvos, with the exception of very, very, very limited exceptions, cannot be the reason for a person's life to end prematurely. Obviously, the big three, we know, because of some drashos that Chazal make, the big three, avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shfichas damim, idolatry, immorality, and murder. So those mitzvos are so grave and so horrific that we actually would give up our lives rather than violate them. Some things actually are more important than our lives. And the other overarching concept is chil Hashem. without Chilul Hashem doesn't mean that you didn't say thank you to the bus driver, although that's how it's always spoken about. But Chilul Hashem means you actually make a public desecration of God's name by violating, publicly violating one of the mitzvos, even a relatively light mitzvah or light halacha. So very, very important. So in all other instances, in all other circumstances, with the exception of those three or four, we do violate all the mitzvos, and Shabbos is included. So there's a mitzvah. There's a specific mitzvah to violate in the interest of saving a person's life, specifically when it comes to Shabbos, or for our purposes when it comes to Shabbos. Halamata, you've thereby learned she'ein mishpatei haTorah nikama ba'olam el rachamim v'chesed v'shalom ba'olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give us mitzvahs because he's trying to exact vengeance against us, because he's upset with us, and he doesn't like how we acted, and he doesn't like the way that humanity behaved, and therefore he's going to stick it to one nation in particular by giving them all the mitzvahs. Chas v'shalom a million times over. The purpose in giving Klai Yisrael the Torah was for them to benefit from all the mercy and all the kindness and all the qualities of shalom and chesed that are latent in the Torah. And also that then becomes, they become an example by which everybody else should live. There are certain mitzvahs that are particularized within Klal Yisrael to serve as something of a dogma, something of an example for the rest of the world to follow, even if they aren't going to follow specifically by keeping shatnez and specifically by not eating chazer. But that broadly and generally, we serve as role models for the rest of the world in terms of morality and decency and honor and nobility and rachmanus, mercy, kindness, generosity. So the Elah Apikorsim Sha'omer, those Apikorsim who say, Shezech Chilul Shabbos Va'aser, who claim that this would be an act of Chilul Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to do this, Alei Anakas of Omer, the Pasuk says about such a person, V'gam Anim Nasati Lehem Chukim Lo Tovim, U'Mishpatim Lo Yichyu Bahem, that I give them laws that aren't good, that aren't pleasant, and I've given them the statutes or edicts that they should not live by. That is the presentation that such a person is making to himself, that he's making to other Jews, that he's making indeed to the rest of the planet, to everyone. We have an obligation and a duty to show everyone, to show ourselves first and foremost in our own communities and our own nation, but also the entire planet, that what we do is replete with goodness and with kindness, as one would expect from the Dvar Hashem. That is this mitzvah, that is this obligation that we have of Pikuach Nefesh, even in the face of something as important as Shabbos. Remember that Shabbos in of itself bears a chiyuv skila. It's a very, very unpleasant punishment for a person who violates Shabbos. And yet, nevertheless, we do so willingly, and we do so with zrizus when it comes to potentially saving somebody's life. Would you need to do the malach with a shinu? There's a question here. So far, everything that we've discussed, no shinu would be required. No shinu would be necessary. And indeed, just considering the thought process that we've mentioned before, that you want to be able to do it as quickly and as swiftly as possible, if employing a shinoi is in any way going to lead to some sort of hesitation, indeed, this is the advice that those in the medical profession are given, Hatzalah members and the like, don't employ any shinoi. Do whatever you need to do in as routine a manner as possible, in a manner that doesn't require that much thinking or rearrangement of your usual patterns. You should be saving a life as directly and swiftly as possible. We'll discuss cases where, you know, there are some of these like edge or fringe kinds of cases where not so clear. On the one hand, largely we might look at this as being a consideration of pikuach nefesh, and yet, like, do we really think this person's life is in danger right here and right now? And generally have to get to the hospital. It's not such a fringe case. This is kind of the thought process we have when it comes to a woman giving birth. That on the one hand, it's pikuach nefesh. On the other hand, it's maisa b'chol yom. It happens so frequently that, like, you have time to get to the hospital. There's a certain, you know, rhythm to this whole process. We're not so concerned or so worried that there's such a pronounced need. Let's say immediately, you can employ a shinui. You can, have a non-Jew involved, right? Ordering an Uber rather than taking your own car. We'll talk about that case and other such cases. But for right now, no shinui being employed. This is direct malacha. Everything you've always read that you can't do and is usher to do, that's exactly the way we want to do it when it comes to saving a person's life. Okay. Not only do we violate Shabbos in order to save a person and save a person's life, give them a new lease on life. They're going to get out of the hospital and they're going to live another 40 years and they're going to have so many accomplishments and they're going to have children and grandchildren and great grandchildren. It's going to be beautiful. But we say here, not only are we Mechal Shabbos, l'hatzalas chaye ha'adam, gam im ein b'maaseu el kadei laharich es chayev l'sho'a kala b'lvad. I violate Shabbos even if I'm only extending that person's life by a mere few moments. If I can give this person a mere few moments here on this earth, I would still be Mechal Shabbos in order to prolong that life. This happens all the time when it comes to end of life issues, where we see what's happening. We see the trajectory, al pi derech hateva, in the natural order of things, the natural course of things, this person is going to expire. They're not going to be leaving the hospital. And yet, there are considerations sort of this way and that way about, you know, do we allow them to go into shock? Do we allow them to, do we remove medication? These are considerations both for Shabbos and also generally about how involved we are and how much intervention we engage in order to try to save a person's life. And let's say those last few moments, I can, if I do X, Y, or Z, which is going to involve a malacha on Shabbos, so I can give them another hour to live. We absolutely would do that. Gets to a point where it's not just that you're fighting an uphill battle, but it gets to a point of absurdity where this terminology is used in English. It does have halachic bearing as well, that there's a distinction between prolonging life and prolonging death, where at some point we say this really, really is the end. And the idea of continuing, like, you know, another bag of medicine in the IV drip, another round of antibiotics, and another this and another that, it's no longer a question of trying to prolong life at this point. We're making death really drag on, where otherwise the person's neshama is really prepared to leave. So these are very, very delicate issues, very delicate questions and considerations, but we should be aware, just have an awareness that this is the halakha, that even just for chaye shah, even just for a short period of time, for a few minutes, moments, certainly hours, we would violate Shabbos, number one, al pi halakha. And also as a hashkafa, we should really, really, really get into our minds that the notion of what the rest of the world considers to be a life worth living and a life worth saving is so foreign to us, is so far from our conception. The idea of having quality of life that makes life worth living, that is defined by, you know, golf and skiing, is just not so. We do absolutely believe in the notion of, especially at the end of life, that having a few extra moments, that there can be additional zechuyos, even if only through some of the difficulty. We don't try to prolong pain and suffering, but that when that comes hand in hand with a certain measure of discomfort and difficulty, even yisurin, that's very healthy, that's helping to purge the neshama of maybe some of the iniquity that it's picked up over the course of life, and it is paving the way to a freer and a more expansive Gan Eden. These are all very important considerations to bear in mind. There are people who are laid up in hospital beds who are very much involved in some extraordinary things, are still learning, are still speaking in Torah, Divrei Torah, are writing Divrei Torah, are communicating, are performing acts of chesed by being on the phone, are a joy to their family, are providing simcha for other people, are serving as recipients of chesed for other people. All these things really are quite important. Okay, let's just take a look at the end of this page here, and we'll finish up. No difference between a gadol and a katan. We don't say that somebody who is an adult, they're worthy of saving because they're chayav and mitzvos, their life is somehow or another more meaningful. Nor do we say, by the way, it's obviously more painful, and without delving into this topic too much for right now, but it's obviously more painful when tragedy befalls a katan and a child. But we don't say that with respect to chilul Shabbos and trying to save somebody's life, that either one is more important, that it is only the gadol that will violate Shabbos for, or only the katan that will violate Shabbos for. Indeed, we violate Shabbos even for, this is how we paskin, even for an ubar, even for a fetus. That's not yet a full life, al pi halacha, even at a very, very early stage of development. So we do employ full on Chilul Shabbos for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, even in those circumstances. Okay, finally, let's take a look at Dalit and Hevdel bin Chilul Shabbos Latzos Kaiha Adam Hanasa Ali De Hakola Atzmo, bin Chilul Shabbos Hanasa Ali De Acherim. There's no difference with respect to Pikuach Nefesh between the person themselves, the patient themselves, the person facing the danger himself, and the person who's trying to remove that other individual from danger. Either way, we have an obligation. So it's not only that it's my obligation to save my own skin, but not to save somebody else's skin. It is. It's an obligation. It's an opportunity. This is a fulfillment of the Chai Bahem, even if I'm saving another person. And we should jump for those opportunities. Hopefully they shouldn't exist too often. We shouldn't even be in danger in the first place. When they do arise and they do exist, we should respond again with alacrity, with zrizus, with love, and we should view it for the opportunity that it is. Not on oy vavoy nebuch that I have to be mechal Shabbos. Oh, I want my whole life not being mechal Shabbos. There's an opportunity to fulfill this great, great mitzvah of Chai Bahem. And again, we should really seize that opportunity. Should have never come around. Okay, let us pause here, friends. We'll begin on the next page of Mirtz Hashem next week. Thanks very, very much for taking the time. And may our learning continue to serve as a zechuyos for Am Yisrael. Everyone have a wonderful night.
Rabbi, yeah. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Let's say like you live in New York City or something, and you figure it'd be faster to take a taxi than to get an ambulance over to you and then to the hospital. So then in that case, like, you're allowed to grab your credit card on the way or cash on the way. There's no difference, right?
So if it's necessary, meaning if you're going to need, we'll talk about some of these things with respect to, like, let's say getting into a hospital and signing, like all these kind of ancillary activities, right? I don't really need to do this for Pikuach Nefesh, but I can't get what I need in order to, let's say, get to the hospital unless I also have these things. Right, so there may be some other things, other issues involved there. There's the muktzah and there's a hutzah, there's carrying, right? Maybe you're going, depending on where you are, you might be going outside the tchum and carrying outside the tchum. There are other issues. Short answer is that if those things really are necessary in order to be able to get the care that you need, then it's absolutely permissible. Oftentimes, there are other ways of dealing with that. Right. Again, sometimes you're just so harried, you don't even have time to consider any of these other ways. But with something like a normal, typical situation of like labor and delivery, where you know that you have a little bit of time, there are usually things that you can employ and strategies. You can ask other people and they can come and they can take the bag. And I've done this at least a few times. And, you know, can you please carry the bag inside? Can you please open the door? When it is acute pikuach nefesh and you need to run, you need to go, whatever is necessary in order to get the care you need, even some of those other ancillary kinds of activities are still wanted.
Wow. Thank you.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
The entire chapter is about saving Jewish lives or saving all kinds of—
Right now, all just to be to like very, very clear and streamlined, we're talking about Jewish life right now. You know, we're talking about—
Okay.
We'll have to have a conversation about, okay, so what does that mean? You know, I don't always have the let's say I'm a, you know, in the medical profession, don't necessarily have the luxury of picking and choosing who the patients are. What that means is there still license given to engage in pikuach nefesh. We'll have to deal with those other considerations.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. All good, everyone. Okay, have a wonderful night. Kol tov, everyone. Be well.